The saddest case I've ever investigated in my time as Ombudsman. That's what the Victorian Ombudsman, Deborah Glass, said in 2018 after her investigation into the jailing of a 38-year-old woman with a significant developmental disorder. The woman, who was given the pseudonym Rebecca, spent up to 23 hours a day in solitary confinement over 18 months, during which she lost almost half of her body weight due to distress. Rebecca had ended up in prison despite being found unfit to stand trial because there was simply nowhere else for her to go. From the 16th of February, that's Tuesday, the hearings of the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation of People with Disability will focus on the experiences of people with cognitive disability in the criminal justice system. Eileen Baldry is one of the people giving evidence at the Commission this week. Eileen is Professor of Criminology at the University of New South Wales, where she's also the Deputy Vice-Chancellor of Equity, Diversity and Inclusion. Professor Baldry, thanks very much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you for inviting me.
What is the range of conditions that are covered by this term cognitive disability that the Commission is going to be looking into this week?
Yeah, it's a very, very wide term. So things like intellectual disability, borderline intellectual disability, FASD, the fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, acquired brain injury, some aspects of people on autism spectrum. It's a wide net because it is really important that all of those people are understood to experience disabling things in the community that make their lives more difficult and make it, particularly for this group, more likely that they might get caught up in the criminal justice system.
The chair of the commission, Ronald Sackville, says that imprisonment rates for people with cognitive disability, especially First Nations people, are far higher than for the general population. How much higher are they, and why do you think that is?
Yeah, well, they are definitely much higher. I'll just preface this by saying that there is no general overall measure across Australia. Every state and territory has its own justice system, but almost none of them collect really good data on people with cognitive disability who end up in the criminal justice system, because criminal justice system includes police, courts, legal aid on legal services, prisons, and community service orders. So there are a lot of people who get pulled into the criminal justice system. In all of the work that I and my team have done over many years, we estimate that people who have cognitive disability and or mental health disorder and or very commonly drug or alcohol disorder and possibly other disability, a hearing impairment, is reasonably common, particularly amongst Aboriginal people in some jurisdictions. So we estimate that it's well over half of the prison population who is in prison today have some form of disability. And in some of the work we've done, particularly amongst Aboriginal people who end up in prison in particular, it is as high as 90%. Mm. And when you think of the rate in the general community, we are looking at between 5 and 10% of people having complex support needs.
The case of Rebecca that we mentioned in the introduction, the Ombudsman also said that the judge in that case, even though Rebecca was found not fit to stand trial, said that she probably would have been sentenced to a month in prison if she'd pleaded guilty and been sentenced, and yet she ended up spending 18 months incarcerated. How common is this problem of indefinite detention, and how many people is it happening to?
Yes. So it's not overly common, because it is a sentence that is, or it's a form of trial in a court, which only occurs in New South Wales, for example, in a higher court. But that said, there are so many examples, particularly of Aboriginal or First Nations people, and Those of us who are in this area, as I said, there is no proper data. We estimate that maybe 1,000 people across Australia with cognitive disability are kept in indefinite detention. And the thing about indefinite detention is that originally it was sort of intended to be a positive, so that a person then received support or therapy and then was able to resume their life in the community. The massive problem for people with cognitive disability is there isn't a therapy. If you have a brain injury, if you have intellectual disability, any kind of cognitive impairment, it is there, it is permanent. And therefore, somebody like the woman that you led with, and also like many others, have been kept indefinitely for years and years and years because they're not seen to be improving. So there is a really serious problem with the way the law and the courts work on this.
And I suppose that's why the Commission's also asking or looking into the impact of what they describe as appropriate diversions and supports for people with cognitive disability. What are your thoughts on that issue? And are there places that are doing this better than Australia or particular parts of Australia?
Yeah. In Australia, there are some examples of good approaches. So, for example, I was part of something led by Professor McSherry in Melbourne that was around assisted or supported decision making about, for example, whether they'll even plead guilty or not. Mm. A supported decision approach can be extremely helpful, and we had very good outcomes in the trials that were run on that. So that's an example, but it's not yet commonly used. The really key things are that this group of people should not end up being arrested in the first place. And you just have a bit of a think. I mean, and your listeners, think if it, do you know somebody or you know a family where there is a person with some form of cognitive disability, ADHD or autism and so on. If that family is reasonably, you know, is it middle class or knows how to interact with various systems, it is much more unlikely that their family member will end up being, well, they might be picked up by the police, but being arrested and being sentenced in a court. That is because they know how to get support and proper disability support. The groups that we see ending up in the criminal justice system, not entirely, but almost entirely, come from very poor, racialized, disadvantaged communities where it is very difficult for them and their families to get the kind of support they need very early on when it's realized that the person has disability or when it is acquired. So I have to say so strongly that those places in the world that do this better, some Scandinavian countries, for example, are countries that ensure that there is good disability support right from the word go.
At the outset, yes. At
the outset. And this, it doesn't entirely prevent people being arrested, but it reduces significantly that outcome. And then I think one of the other things to say is that there are, I mentioned that one about decision-making, support decision-making. There are examples in Australia of, for example, New South Wales has something called the Community Justice Program. Now, that is specifically for people with cognitive disability who are coming out of prison or are in contact or are maybe in remand, in contact with the criminal justice system at extreme risk of continuing on that treadmill, going in and out of prison or being arrested. And that is a wraparound, disability-focused, excellent service. No, it doesn't, again, it doesn't stop everything happening, but it is such a good step in the right direction. Well, and so we do have examples.
Yeah, well, it certainly seems like an area where much more intervention and support is needed, and hopefully that will be one of the outcomes of the Royal Commission. It's a broad and complex problem, but Professor Eileen Baldry, thank you so much for helping us understand it on Sunday Extra.
You're more than welcome, Julian. Thank you.
And Eileen Baldry is the Deputy Vice-Chancellor of Equity, Diversity and Inclusion at the University of New South Wales, as well as being a Professor of Criminology.